Hello, everybody. This is Scott McNulty, your internet pal. Before the show begins, I just want to remind you, or actually tell you, that it is that time of year again, the incomparable membership drive. That's how you can support the fine shows that you find here on the Incomparable Network. You can sign up for a monthly or annual pledge to support Random Trek and all the other podcasts that you love from the Incomparable. Here's what you do. Go to theincomparable.com/members and sign up. You'll be asked to pick the shows on the network you'd like to support. You can check the box just for Random Trek, although I suggest you check the box for other shows with podcast hosts that can say box correctly, perhaps. Maybe TV or the game show, whatever podcast you enjoy. And then your contribution will be split up between the podcasts that you select there. So if you only select one, your entire podcast contribution will go there after some fees are taken out. As a thank you for supporting us, members receive lots of extras. There's exclusive bonus content, a bootleg podcast where you can hear episodes of shows right away after they've been recorded without having to wait for them to be edited, and a members-only community on Slack. And since this is pledge season, we are recording some special members-only bonus episodes. In fact, if you are a fan of me and Star Trek, probably Star Trek more than me, you can hear me talk about The Orville with Jason Snell on a special Random Trek TV crossover. And you can also hear me game master the second adventure of the USS Incomparable as we play Star Trek Adventures, the role-playing game, with a host of the Incomparable podcast hosts. So here's what you do. There are contribution levels at $5, $10, and $20 a month and annual equivalents. If you're already a member, it's easy to increase your pledge to a higher level and get some special goodies in return. So if you'd like to support us, go to theincomparable.com/members to sign up. Thanks for bearing with this pledge drive announcement, and I hope you enjoy the show. Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. I continue my streak of repeat guests by being joined by Erica Ensign. Erica, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me back.
Always a pleasure. Erica, before we jump in to the podcasty goodness, I don't know what that is. Why don't you tell the people a little bit about yourself?
I am a podcaster. I do many, many podcasts.
So many.
Probably my primary podcast is Verity. That's a Doctor Who podcast on the Incomparable Network. I also do Lazy Doctor Who, which is my spouse, Stephen, and I sitting on the couch and just watching an episode and then talking about it. Also on the Incomparable Network, Beginner's Puck, I do a podcast about sports. That's right. I talk about hockey with my friend Deb. Yeah. It's great because you can be a nerd about lots of things. Sports is one of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Also on the Incomparable Network, Erp Chirp, where two of my local friends and I talk in person about Wynonna Earp, which is both set and shot in Alberta. So we bring the local perspective. Plus several other podcasts. I'm on Total Party Kill quite a lot.
Yes.
And I read and co-produce the podcast for Uncanny Magazine, which is a fantasy, science fiction, short fiction, poetry magazine.
You're a busy person, Erica.
I really, really am.
I'm exhausted just hearing all the things that you do. We're here to talk about Star Trek, but you are a Doctor Who fan.
Primarily, yes.
Primarily.
I do enjoy the Star Treks.
I know.
But yeah.
But as I was brushing my teeth this morning, I thought of a question to ask you.
Okay.
Which Star Trek captain do you think would make the best Doctor Who? And I don't mean the actor. I mean the character.
The actual character. Ooh, that is a really good question. And you know what? I am going to say, I think I'm going to say Captain Archer after watching this. Yes. And I do have to caveat, this is the only episode of Enterprise I have ever seen.
Fair.
So if this isn't a good example of him, then, you know, take that with a giant grain of salt. But the one thing that I was completely freaking out over in watching this episode, I mean, I love Scott Bakula. I liked Quantum Leap. I watched Lord of Illusions.
I don't know what that is.
Multiple times. Like, you got to like Scott Bakula a lot for that. So I really enjoy him as an actor. But one thing that I either never noticed or is just specific to his portrayal of Captain Archer is, Scott, are you familiar with the work of actor Ethan Embry?
Ethan Embry. I don't know. I'm really bad with people's names, so I'm going to Google right now.
He was the lead, as a youngster, he was the lead in a rom-com called Can't Hardly Wait.
Mm-hmm.
He also played the bass player in That Thing You Do, which is one of my favorite movies.
Marisa was watching that yesterday, and I said, I've never seen this movie. And the startled gasp that greeted that apparently confession was impressive.
So anyway, Ethan Embry, you know, you look at pictures of him on the internet, and I wouldn't say, hey, that guy looks like Scott Bakula or vice versa. I'd never noticed any comparison there. However, Captain Archer, in this episode, the way that he physically carried himself, his body language, the way that he tilted his head, his sort of aw shucks hesitancy about the way that he was making decisions was just, it was 100% Ethan Embry, like this character style that Ethan Embry plays in many of the movies that he is in. And it was so intense that I just kept, it was really wigging me out. It really, really was. But I feel like that particular style of acting would be a really, really interesting sort of choice for an actor playing the Doctor. I think that would fit really well. I mean, not that I necessarily need another, you know, middle-aged white guy playing the Doctor, but just in terms of character traits for captains, I think that's the one that I would like to see the most.
Well, that's an interesting answer. I am not sure. So the episode we watched and we're going to be talking about is Enterprise episode, as Erica and you smart listeners probably have surmised based on the fact that Erica talked about Captain Archer. Season 2, episode 23, Regeneration.
Weird that you randomly picked an episode that's called Regeneration.
That's
because
true.
That is what the Doctor does when his or her, you know, sort of body is damaged so much that they cannot go on. They regenerate into another actor.
You cannot escape Doctor Who, Erica. No matter.
I can't. The last time I was on, was it just the last time I had an actual Doctor Who actor? So
yes.
It just keeps happening.
Well, the Doctor Who actors, I feel like, just churn up everywhere. I was going to call Scott Bakula Doctor Who. Captain Archer in this episode. I think it's a pretty typical Captain Archer. He's kind of stern. He frowns a lot. He's got difficult decisions to make. Although the one difficult decision he makes, he kind of, I feel like, there's a point at which a couple of Borg, spoiler alert, there are Borg in this episode, are on the Enterprise and he needs to get rid of them. And so he comes up with the idea of opening up a port and sucking them out into space, which I think is a very clever solution. But he doesn't actually order T'Pol to do it. He just kind of says her name and she knows what he means, which I felt like is ceding a little bit of the responsibility to her.
That feels like a real doctorish thing to do too, actually, when I think about it.
Because I was kind of like, come on, Captain Archer, you should order her to kill these people. Not just imply that you would like them to be killed.
Mm-hmm. He still clearly feels the guilt for that action after the fact. So I feel like maybe he was trying to, absolve himself a little bit in the moment there, but it certainly didn't work emotionally.
No, he still feels bad about it. Now, this episode was somewhat controversial because this is now, I guess, canonically the first time anyone in Star Trek chronology meets the Borg.
Wouldn't First Contact
Well, I guess First Contact, because Zefram Cochrane, I don't know. This is the first, it screws up the
episodic
timeline. Yes. And so people were upset. As they get upset.
As a Doctor Who fan, a show that changes its own history semi-regularly, basically every time the showrunner changes, I understand fans getting upset about rewriting the canonical history of something. And so I thought, again, that was a really fun, this is a really fun episode to just be like dipped into, because basically this episode turns the Borg into a bootstrap paradox. which is, I love bootstrap paradoxes. They are one of my favorite things. There's a bunch of them in Doctor Who. For listeners who don't know what that means, it comes from a short story, and I don't remember who wrote it, about a guy who goes back in time and I think becomes his own father or something. There's some nonsense that happens. But because the Borg traveled from the future in First Contact, thank goodness I've seen First Contact, otherwise I wouldn't have all of this context. Mm-hmm. So they travel back. Some of them get frozen in a bunch of fake snow and later thawed out, and then send the coordinates of Earth to their contemporary counterparts, like, you know, back in time. Yes. And that's how the Borg knows to come and find the Federation, you know, the 24th century, whenever it is. So if not for that, they never would have come, probably never would have come in the first place. So it's just like this circular logic thing. And as they say on Doctor Who, circular logic will only make you dizzy.
That is true. And I thought I should come forward and say that I am not one of these people who is wedded to canon, and I like it when they kind of fiddle around with it. My only quibble with this episode, which I thought was one of the rare good episodes of Enterprise, is that I feel like at the end they blew up all the Borg, and then it's kind of like, let's never speak of this again. And so when the Borg come in 200 years hence, everyone's like, I don't know what these things are.
Yeah.
And I feel like they would have maybe run it in the database. They don't know what the name of these things are, but I feel like Starfleet would have remembered somehow that these cybernetic guys showed up and killed a bunch of people and stole a ship.
Yeah, especially if Captain Archer could remember an offhand comment / story that Zefram Cochrane told at a commencement speech. You'd think the record keeping in the Federation might be a little bit better. But maybe they don't have great archivists at that point in the future.
That's true. Or maybe Captain Archer is like, you know what? Let's not tell anybody for some reason. I don't know why he would decide that.
He feels so guilty.
That's right. It's never happened. Dr. Phlox is fine. Let's just move on with this, everybody.
My quibble with that, the end of it, was I hadn't even thought about that part of it. Now I'm quibbling with that as well, Scott. Thank you.
You're welcome.
But it was just that, okay, so he managed to blow up the other ship. I would have turned around and turned the phasers and photon torpedoes or whatever they had and, like, vaporized every single tiny little molecule of that ship, because otherwise, you know, some poor space trucker is just gonna run through there and, like, accidentally hit a nano cloud and end up being a local Borg. We don't need that.
No, you don't. The Borg is bad news, man. Don't kid around. The one thing there are many things I liked about this episode. I do like the fact, so the Borg are kind of, I would say, one of, if not the iconic enemies in Star Trek. Very similar to the Cybermen. And so,
down to the language.
Yes, it's true. So I wanted to give a shout out to the Cybermen, which I also think are a very effective Doctor Who enemy, because of this, they share the same basic principle, right? It's kind of this body horror plus, you know, no reasoning. They just want to assimilate and take you over. You can't reason with them. They don't care.
No emotions.
The individuals don't matter. So you can kill as many as you want, but they just make more. And it's all to serve the collective, which is a very alien thing. And yet it's kind of a terrifying thing, right? So it's very effective. Mm-hmm. And we know the audience watching this knows who the Borg are, generally speaking, I would imagine. But the people, the characters on the show don't. And so especially when they dig them up from the snow and they're in this little research facility, and they're kind of like, well, one of the researchers is like, well, maybe we should just put them back in like cold storage so they don't wake up. And the other researcher is like, it'll be fine. Don't just worry.
I was like, have you never seen a horror movie? There, like, anytime you're like at the Arctic Circle or in Antarctica and something weird happens, whatever that is, you want to keep it cold. Don't let it thaw. It's always a bad idea.
It also seems like they would have, now, you know, I'm not one, you shouldn't judge people by their looks. Although one person in this episode, one of the researchers says, well, they don't look friendly.
Yeah, right.
And they really don't look friendly. So it's kind of like, well, maybe we should just keep them on ice until we have more people here with bigger guns, just in case.
I mean, I really feel like better safe than sorry is the way to go when you're dealing with any type of, I mean, they know that these creatures came from space. Mm-hmm. Like they crashed in a spaceship. So, okay, leave aside the fact that they don't look friendly and, you know, one of the arms looks like it has a weapon attached to the end of it. Like, forget about all of that. What about, you know, biology, bacteria, viruses? I feel like maybe they should have had some sort of containment that was a little bit better and stronger than just putting them on stretchers in the middle of the room.
Yeah, and one of those, I don't even know what they're called, but they're these typical Arctic structures, which look like half a barrel. And I'm sure they have a name, but I don't know what they're called. And yeah, they're just kind of hanging out there, and they leave one guy by himself, which is never a good idea.
Yeah, right. And yep, they haven't seen any horror movies. That's they must have gone out of fashion by this time in the future.
One thing I do want to say, though, is that we know this is science fiction because it's a couple hundred years in the future, and there's still an Arctic Circle. So, exactly, and polar bears. That's not going to happen. And so they say, yeah, researcher, I need to go check on some equipment. Why don't you hang out with these creepy bodies? Even though we have already seen one of the arms kind of reactivate, I'll leave you by yourself and you'll be fine. He was not
fine. Nobody was fine.
Nobody was fine. I do think, though, I will give it credit because there is a scene where they show the guy looking at one of these Borg corpses, and Marisa and I both said, oh, he's gonna die right now. He's gonna die. And then they cut to another scene and he doesn't die. But then they cut back and he dies.
I did appreciate, I mean, I am going to cut it some slack because one of the tropes of science fiction is the scientist who is all about the science and really, really excited about science and making discoveries. So while I'm not totally okay with sort of the lax security that they have here and the lax protocol, you know, I give it a bit of a pass because it is fun to see the greedy scientists who just want to learn as much as they possibly can and then pay for it with their lives.
Oh.
So I'm okay with that. And I also appreciated narratively how we sort of get an echo of that later on when Phlox, you know, assures Captain Archer, I don't think they're much of a threat.
They'll be fine.
So we have that happening. We have that happening twice, and it, you know, burns them both times. So it was a nice little bit of symmetry there.
Yes, it's never fine with the Borg. They don't know this yet. They haven't learned their lesson, but they do by the end of this episode, although then they forget about it later on.
But apparently.
And I did like, even though despite the fake snow that was painful to look at every time they showed it, I did like the beginning part at the Arctic Circle Research Lab. They set it up well because, you know, oh no, it's the Borg. Nothing good can come of this. Nothing good does come of it. All the researchers are assimilated, and the Borg steal a transport. And it's like maybe, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes of this episode is set here where we don't see any characters that we know except this Admiral that we see every once in a while.
I honestly, at the beginning, because I had never seen Enterprise before, I wasn't sure if this was our crew or this was part of our crew. And I really did enjoy that beginning section, as I enjoy the beginning of, like, The Thing and Doctor Who's The Seeds of Doom and, you know, all the other stories that start this way. It's fun. I dig it. But I wasn't, like, I didn't realize that wasn't my peeps until we got a little farther into it. And I got to the point where I recognized, oh, yes, all of these people are going to die. I was actually just surprised to see Earth because that's, you know, in most of the other Star Trek series, you don't see stuff happening on Earth. So, and I mean, maybe that's a really common thing in Enterprise. I wouldn't know, but I was kind of shocked to see that, like, little subtitle saying Earth, Arctic Circle. It's like, whoa, we're on a planet.
That I know that planet.
Yeah, I've been to that planet. I keep my stuff there.
That's right. Ooh, the tick. Yes, Enterprise, I think, probably has the largest percentage of kind of Earth-based action of any of the Star Trek series, just because the whole, you know, Starfleet's just starting out, and it's on Earth, and Vulcans are hanging out. So, and as I was watching this, I hadn't seen this episode before, so I was like, how are they... Are they going to make the Enterprise come back to Earth for no particular reason? Like, why would the Enterprise get called in on this? And that's when we find out, oh, they're called in on this because the Borg, formerly The research people who have been assimilated, plus the two Borg that they revived, have stolen a transport and kind of upgraded it and are going somewhere. Nobody knows where. But they just happen to be going towards the Enterprise. So, which, if they weren't, it would be a very different episode because it would end in like 10 minutes, I guess.
Point of order. Is it the Enterprise or is it Enterprise? Because that was one thing I noticed, that when at least one person in the episode referred to the ship, they said, you know, they could get on Enterprise or it could damage Enterprise, which is not the way that I have heard it referred to in other series.
They do call it just Enterprise on Enterprise. I still call it the Enterprise, okay, though, because I don't like that.
That's fair. I am not judging you. I was just curious if that was a one-off weird script thing or if that's the way they refer to it on the show.
No, it's kind of like one of those, you know, when companies have, like Apple, have branding standards and they don't want you to call it the iPad. It's always iPad.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, that's not going to happen.
We have Ice District downtown Edmonton. Not the Ice District, just Ice District.
Exactly. The will just sully it. We need our brand to remain pure.
How very pedestrian. We need no definite articles.
That's right. Back on the, I was going to say the, back on Enterprise, I'll try to be, I'm not going to be able to say it, so I'm just not going to say it at all.
That's fine.
They are like, OMG, there's this weird transport, let's check it out. And I will say another thing that I liked about this episode is that the transport is being assimilated itself, and it looks really cool. So thumbs up to whoever designed that transport, because I like it. But, oh no, they can't find the Borg, but the Borg have found themselves a Tarkalian freighter. And the one thing we know about the Borg is when you meet them, it generally doesn't go well for you. And so these poor Tarkalians. Now, this is another, Enterprise likes to put Scott Bakula and Captain Archer in these kind of dilemmas, these moral dilemmas. I guess every Star Trek really does. And now he has to choose between, they show up and they have basically stopped the attack. So there are two Tarkalians that are still alive on the freighter, and the Borg are going to hot-foot it away. And now Captain Archer has to decide, do we stay and save the two people on the freighter, or do we go after this clear threat? Now, he does not know anything about the Borg. So
right.
I think at that point, if he knew about the Borg, he would have said, you know what? We probably should just go after the Borg, even though that's a tough decision. I know. But he doesn't.
I think since I hadn't seen anything with him in it before, that sort of gave me a good picture of his character. He wants to save people, and that I like that was his choice when he was, you know, forced to make this decision. I was on board with that.
Yes.
Because, you know, those two people probably had families that would miss them very much, and without all of the information, then there's no way of knowing if, you know, how big of a threat that ship is that's now getting away.
Exactly. It is shades of First Contact, which basically, so this episode is basically the repercussions of First Contact, in which we see Captain Picard killing a bunch of his former crew members, and Alfre Woodard is kind of horrified, and she says, how could you just kill Ensign whatever Smith? And he, Captain Picard, turns to her and said, he was already dead, which, if you don't know the Borg, you don't know that is the case. But spoiler alert, these two Tarkalians that they rescue, quote unquote, have already been assimilated, and so they're just trouble, and nobody knows except the people who are watching us. We know it's not a good idea.
I have questions about the assimilation process.
Oh, I have, like, answers, maybe
both for the people and for the ships. Like, you know, there's one point where they're catching up, and they go, you know, the mass of the ship or whatever has increased by like 3-something%. I'm like, the mass has increased? Where is this extra mass coming from? Is there some sort of wormhole to another dimension where they're getting new mass?
I don't know where that mass came from.
Yeah. And you know, where do these nanobots get the metal? Like, you know, you see the little metal things and tubes and stuff growing on people as they're becoming more and more assimilated. Like, yeah, the human body has some trace amounts of metal in it. But if you take all of that metal from the other parts of the body to make little, you know, doodads on people's foreheads, that's probably A, not going to go very well for the rest of the body. And B, I don't think there's enough to create like an entire tube going from point A to point B. Like, I just did. Yeah, I have in my notes really big, all caps, I have questions, because I feel like physics might have something to say about this.
You know, I have never thought about that. and you are totally right. It doesn't make any sense. And the thing that in this episode would have eventually led me to think about that, even if we hadn't talked about it, is the point at which they show one of the Borg fiddling with a control panel in the Enterprise. And it like touches it. And then all of a sudden it magically transforms into like Borgified control panel with like it grows like nodules and things. And I thought, like, in 2 seconds, I'm like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Like, you know, so then I find myself when I was thinking about, you know, the people and the metal bits and bobs, I was like, okay, how could it work? Like, what if they just picked up a big chunk of ore and just held it in their hands, and then the nanobots could like take it through their hands and like, you know, bring it through their system. So they like, but that would be very boring and weird to watch. I just, yes. just, or have them swallowing, you know, pellets of iron. That's right. Or something.
Your iron tablets will be assimilated.
Exactly. You gotta head to the infirmary, and yeah, we need the iron, we need the copper, we need the zinc, all your minerals, please.
Well, so I think what happened from a kind of a plotting and kind of storytelling standpoint is in First Contact. Before First Contact, the Borg assimilated people very differently than they do in First Contact. Oh. They would like kidnap you, and then they take you to their ship, and there would be surgery, and they have these like assimilation bays, right? And then in
Makes
First
sense.
Contact, we were introduced to the Borg assimilation tubules, which are the little things that shoot out of their hands and then kind of instantly assimilate you. So I think that they just said, let's continue with that, because it is more, it is creepier,
yep.
but it doesn't make any sense.
If these were, you know, sort of leftovers from that conflict, then absolutely they should have the same type of assimilation tool, even if it's, you know, sort of saying to heck with science.
That's right, to heck with science. We are the Borg. We are just going to assimilate you as fastly, as quickly as we can. And as fastly, they don't care. They don't care about grammar or words. They're the Borg.
Yeah, they're the Borg.
And so now they've got two Borg on Enterprise, which is not going to be great. But Dr. Phlox, as you said earlier, Erica, based on absolutely nothing, says, I don't think they're going to be a problem. Now,
he seems very trusting.
He is very trusting. Dr. Phlox is probably my favorite Enterprise character. But he makes a very bad choice in this episode, which turns out to bite him in the neck when he gets himself hit with the assimilation tubules and injected with nanobots, which is not great for him.
No.
He does not turn into a Borg, though, in case anyone is worried.
I was worried, since I don't know anything about this show, and this is pretty close to the end of the second season. Like, there could have very easily been a change in staff with the actors.
It's so true.
I was like, maybe this guy does turn into a Borg, and like the big moral dilemma that the captain has to have is whether or not he puts him down at the end of the episode. But I was happy to see that it didn't go that way, because the guy who plays Phlox is like, he's one of, you know, those that guys. Mm-hmm. Like, I saw him and I was like, oh, it's that guy. I've seen him in lots of things, including like commercials for stuff.
Oh, yes.
And I've always enjoyed his work.
He pops up in a lot of stuff, and I enjoy him. I like his voice in particular. I don't know why. I just like it. But this dilemma, though, is good. Captain Archer is put into a lot of dilemmas, right? So he, Dr. Phlox feels bad because he underestimated the danger. And now we've got two Borg running around the ship, assimilating other people. I don't remember if they actually assimilate anybody else, but on the ship, that is. But now he's turning into a Borg, and so he doesn't want to leave sickbay, and he's trying to figure out what to happen. And then he comes up with this idea of, you know, he's going to bombard himself with radiation because he has to think like an engineer and not a doctor, and that should kill all the nanobots. When he explains this to Captain Archer, he also says, oh, by the way, you should take this, and gives him a hypo spray. And Captain Archer's like, what is this? And Dr. Phlox says, well, that's a highly potent neurotoxin. And if this fails, you will shoot it into my neck, and my cortical centers will die instantaneously, because I don't want to be a Borg.
Which is, that's totally fair.
I think so. I was thinking about if I were in a situation where I were assimilated by the Borg, which hopefully I would not ever be, I think I would choose to die instead of live my life as a Borg drone.
I don't know. I kind of like busy work and and spreadsheets and data and stuff. I feel like I feel like I could probably fit in.
Do you think the Borg are doing a lot of spreadsheets?
I feel like in their heads they are.
They probably are.
Yeah, like not actually on screens or anything like that, but it, like, you know, it would be, you know, many spreadsheets in my head all the time. So you know, maybe that's all right.
Imagine the macros you could introduce to the collective.
Oh my God. Yeah. Okay, you've talked me into it for sure. 100%.
Oh no, Borg. That's not what I wanted to do. I feel horrible.
I mean, not that I'm choosing that over, you know, regular life. Right. I would much rather continue to be a human, but if it's Borg or death, I'll take Borg.
Well, there you go. You've heard
it's
it here first.
It's important to know these things ahead of time, so when the choice is upon you, you don't have to dither.
That is true. Now, here's my question. Would you choose death or Cyberman?
Oh, that's a different question.
I know.
You know, you'd think, oh, it's the same thing. No.
They are different. They are spiritually very similar, but they have different methods.
Yeah, I think I'd probably rather die than be a Cyberman because, I mean, from what I'm trying to think of all my Doctor Who, and I don't know that anybody has come back from being a Cyberman. It would also depend on which type of Cyberman, because throughout the years, like, you know, there's like, you know, you have your body or most of your body, but...
Or just your face.
Or sometimes it's just your brain is the only thing that's left. I don't think I want that. Whereas at least with the Borg, you know, your body's got a bunch of crap in it, but it's still your body. You can go on to, you know, be a 7 of 9 kind of person and, you know, learn to live.
That is true. There is always hope. Although 7 of 9 is, I think, the only successful. Well, no, there are a couple other characters in Voyager that are Borg, formerly Borg, that the Borg babies. And I guess Hugh is another in TNG. There's
yes,
an episode.
Yes, I was trying to remember his name. I couldn't think of it. I knew it was a single syllable male name. That's all I could get.
Mm-hmm. Bob the Borg. So all right. Well, you may have convinced me that I would pick Borg over death. Now that we've talked about this,
I feel like I've accomplished something here.
Yes, your work here is done, Erica. I would rather be a Borg. Although I do think I don't want to be a Cyberman either. So.
No, I really Cyberman. Don't.
And that's so that's our rankings. We'd rather be human, followed by Borg, and then death, and then Cyberman.
And then Cyberman. Yeah, I think, again, important to know these things before the choice presents itself.
I think so. It's important because it'll be a very stressful situation if a Cyberman or a Borg were to show up in my life. I would be a little freaked out. Or both. Oh, that'd be, well, then I would hope that they would just fight each other and I could run away.
Ooh, that's possible. Yeah, that would be I feel like that's probably happened in the comics because I know that there was a Doctor Who Star Trek crossover, which I heard was much better than you would expect it to be. So maybe the Cybermen did actually meet the Borg. I don't know.
It seems like they would have had to have if you have those two universes. It seems obvious. And then you have to figure out, well, who would beat who in a fight? And, I don't know who. Everyone loses in that fight. That's what I say.
Yeah, basically. Mm-hmm.
And back on the Enterprise is being assimilated by these two Borg, but they get stopped. Seemingly, they get stopped when Captain Archer says, "You know, shoot him into space." To Paul, and Paul's like, "Okay," and she does it, and he feels sad for a little bit. Malcolm Reed is fiddling with his phasers to get more.
Is that what they call it?
Megajoules or gigajoules or something? I don't know. Mm-hmm. He's shooting a square, and it's supposed to mean something, but I don't know what it meant.
And eventually it goes boom, or like fizzles or something, so good work.
Good
Although
work.
I feel like the phaser thing, the amount of time that it takes the Borg to develop, you know, their shield that they adapt, it really, the amount of time seems to vary based on drama.
Yes, like wildly.
Because on the Enterprise, you know, you've got one shot, and ow, it hurts. And then like another shot and maybe ow, it hurts. And then certainly by the third shot, they've got the little shields that pop up, which, you know, actually look pretty cool even for the special effects at the time. I thought that was a neat effect.
It is a neat effect.
And then over on the other transport, the Tarkalian transport, you've got Captain Archer shooting, I don't know how many, like five or
a lot.
Six.
I felt
down.
Like he shot more Borg than were on that ship, I felt like.
Are they dumber over there? Like these are the Borg that got held back in school because they weren't able to adapt quick enough? I don't know. I was giving it a little bit of side eye, even though I appreciated the dramatic tension.
Yes, I understand why they did it, but it doesn't make any sense. It's kind of like, you know, it's annoying when writers break the clearly defined rules that they have already set up for these
yes.
Borg, right? So the Borg, we know several things about the Borg. We know that they can talk to each other over subspace, and that's because it's a collective, and that they adapt very quickly. And so the Borg on Enterprise have adapted to the phasers, so the Borg on the Tarkalian freighter should at the same time adapt as well, but
yeah.
They don't. Because if they did, the captain and Reed would die.
Yep.
And they can't happen. So, and then they wouldn't blow up the ship and the whole episode would fall apart. But I did also give that a little bit of side eye. I was like, I know what you're doing, but I don't like it.
Yep. I feel like there could have been ways to sort of write around that or make it work differently, but whatever. It's a short episode. Like, you don't have that much time to work with. So
that's true. Well, and another thing we know about the Borg, which these people don't know, is that when you beam over, they basically ignore you until you do something that's threatening. So they could have just filmed it where they just walk and they're freaked out because the Borg are completely ignoring them until they start putting their bombs on the subspace or whatever it was, the warp thingy. I don't remember what they were doing. EPS conduit, I think is what it was. And then that's when they attack. And so they kill a couple and then, you know, their shields adapt and then they have to quickly beam out, which is what ends up happening. But it is after they kill like 15 Borg.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
There are a lot of them. And I feel like there were like 12 to start with or something. So I don't know where all these Borg came from. But I guess that's when a mama Borg and a daddy Borg love each other very much.
Well, you know what? They are creating masks out of nothing to get the metal for this ship. Maybe they're just creating people too.
I guess so.
Out of nothing.
And one of the things, the other thing I liked about this episode, well, I like many things about this episode. You think, oh, the Borg are trying to assimilate the Enterprise, but they've been thwarted. But that isn't actually what they were trying to do. They were just booby-trapping the Enterprise so that when the Enterprise got to the freighter and caught up, they could basically cut off the Enterprise's power and then really assimilate the Enterprise. And I thought that was clever.
Yeah, that was, I mean, and that's the kind of thing that you can do when you are sort of a collective consciousness that, you know, these two pieces are basically expendable. So rather than having them try to take over the ship so that they can survive and, you know, we'll have the Enterprise, no, they're just going to do exactly the amount that they need to do in order to make it so that this ship is out of commission long enough that it won't destroy the main hive of Borg that are working, and then we'll just get it later. But it's fine if these two don't make it, and they don't.
Yeah, if they don't make it, that's fine. If they do make it, great. Less work for us. And that's why the Borg, they're so creepy. But it ends with they blow up the Borg freighter, the Tarkalian freighter that is now the Borg freighter. But before it blows up, they send off a subspace message into the Delta Quadrant that we know about because Dr. Phlox, who has cured himself and is now recuperating in sickbay, tells Captain Archer that when he was, and they don't actually believe him, when he was assimilated, he was hearing this voice. He felt like he was part of a collective consciousness. And T'Pol is like, are you sure? Are you hallucinating?
Yeah.
And I was like, come on, wow. T'Pol. It's pretty harsh. And he says, well.
Yeah, for a society that can do mind melds, like, you'd think that maybe she'd be a little bit more open-minded, but okay.
Exactly. Nobody knows anything about these people. Maybe they've got a collective consciousness, which they do. And he says, well, I don't know, but I feel like they sent a subspace message and this string of numbers, and I don't know what it is, but I memorized it because I heard it over and over and over again. And it turns out, as Erica said earlier, that string of numbers was some kind of spatial coordinates based on pulsars or something, pointing the way to Earth for the Borg that are in the Delta Quadrant, which is where Voyager ends up and where the Borg start from. And so now one assumes...
Yeah, but it's going to take hundreds of years, so we don't got to worry about it.
That's right. It'll be fine. We'll never see these people again. And in TNG, the way the... they meet the Borg for the first time is because of Q knocking them into the Borg. So one can assume that the Borg either got that transmission and were slowly making their way to Earth, or we met them before they got the transmission. So who knows what how the timing all works out. Somebody has probably written an article somewhere plotting the star dates.
there may be several.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know. Captain Archer is not happy. He says, I don't think we're safe. I think we've just postponed the problem. But it's not my problem, and let's never talk of this again.
The end.
The end. So, Erica, this is your first and only Enterprise episode you've ever seen. So what do you think about Enterprise?
Well, you know what? I had heard about the theme song, and
I didn't even bring it up.
It was everything I was led to believe and more. Wow. Like, usually when something is built up that much as, like, a thing, you know, you eventually see it, and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, fine, whatever. But no, it was, like, that was it. It's a freaking power ballad. Like, that was seventh grade slow dancing, like in the gymnasium kind of music. I was absolutely gobsmacked that that is a thing that exists at the beginning of a Star Trek show. Wow.
Yes. Imagine, Erica, if you will, a young Scott McNulty sitting down excitedly to watch the first new Star Trek series in years, and in HD. Oh my God, this is going to be the greatest thing ever. There's a little pre-credit roll, as there always is, with, I believe, the first episode of Enterprise involved Klingon. So I think there's a Klingon running through a farm or something like that. And then they cut to very exciting credits, opening credits of a new Star Trek series. The first time I've ever seeing it, and I hear that song.
Wow.
Yeah, it was.
I can't even imagine. My heart weeps for past Scott.
It was not what I was expecting, and I don't know if I've ever recovered, Erica.
honestly, if I was in, like, junior high, I would have loved the crap out of that song, because that's, like, power ballads were my jam. Like, that was great. But as the theme for a Star Trek show, it's just sort of blows my mind, especially considering that it was, you know, well after the time that I was in junior high school. So,
Yeah.
But no, I actually enjoyed this episode of the show. I feel like I didn't get a lot of time with the characters, and I feel like they were interesting enough that I would be interested in getting to know them better. I'm still freaked out by the whole Ethan Embry thing with Captain Archer. So part of me wants to watch more Enterprise just to see if that was just this episode, or if he's just going to be Captain Ethan Embry for me forever and ever. I don't know. But it felt like a really solid episode of a Star Trek show, you know?
I will say that I think you are very lucky that this is your first episode of Enterprise, because this is a good episode. There are no, I mean, I have my minor annoyances, but without a doubt, this gets my good Star Trek episode stamp of approval, because it was enjoyable. And it features the Borg, and the Borg are creepy, and nobody knows what's going on. And I like the Captain Archer's put in these dilemmas, and he makes choices, and he you know, has the repercussions. And it always annoys me when people make stupid mistakes on shows and there are no repercussions. And this episode, certainly everyone who makes a silly mistake feels repercussions almost immediately, which I enjoyed. Yep.
Yeah, it is nice. Consequences are a thing in the real world. It's nice when they are on TV shows as well. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So if you have listened to this podcast but have not watched Regeneration for some reason, go check it out.
Yeah.
I don't know why you would do that, but who am I to judge?
Scott, I listen to many episodes of Random Trek where I haven't seen the episode of Star Trek.
See,
so
who am I to judge?
Please don't judge.
I'm not judging.
Good.
It's fine. I'm flattered that people are like, you know what? I don't want to see the episode that Scott is talking about with this person, but I just want to listen. So yep. I'll take that as a win for me.
Do.
And another win for me is having the opportunity to talk about Star Trek with you, Erica. Again, it's always a pleasure.
It really is. This is like it gets more and more weirdly Doctor Who related with every time. So, you know, in another year, have me back and we'll see how close we can get to Doctor Who at that time.
I think somehow the spreadsheet is going to spit out a Doctor Who episode and they're going to be like, what? There's not even Doctor Who on this spreadsheet.
Hey, you got to do what the spreadsheet says.
That's right.
Yep.
It's true. As we have learned, maybe that is the first. That's how the Borg origin story is. This my spreadsheet gains sentience and starts suggesting shows that it wants me to watch.
I'm on board with this. Headcanon accepted.